Horizon. A mosquito beats its wings.
This tiny creature, and the silent killer it carries, is the target of one of medical science's greatest quests. A battle to save millions of lives and end a scourge that has shaped human history. Malaria.
One child dies every single minute from malaria.
So you might ask yourself, why are kids still dying?
For almost a century, scientists have had one goal.
We don't want to use the word the Holy Grail, but if we got vaccines, then of course that would be transformational.
The chances of success are really, really small, but the rewards if you do it are enormous.
This is the inside story across four continents of a new vaccine against malaria.
Is Slate One up on mine or is it on yours?
No, but the folder's up.
It's being made by the same Oxford University team behind the UK's COVID vaccine.
We have the hair off, so those little sacs that have got the parasites in.
But this time, it's an even more complex scientific challenge.
It didn't work.
I remember very openly and straight telling that this is not going to work.
And after many tweaks and changes, it did.
Well, to me, it was unthinkable before it happened.
Another good news story about British vaccines. It will probably have the biggest impact on global public health for generations. It will be up there with clean water. It is that big.
This could be a game changer.
You are touching human life. You are going to save the human life. It's not one or two, it's millions of lives. Amazing, isn't it?
The battle to beat malaria. A close-up of a mosquito with its long, spindly legs and fine fibres covering its head and antennae.
Throughout our history, the mosquito has been the paramount killer of humanity. If we look at our Neverland nightmares, we're taught to fear all these other creatures because they kill so many humans. That's just simply not true. For example, wolves and sharks killing about 10 people per year. Whereas the mosquito, this tiny little animal, the size and weight of a grape seed, is responsible for up to a million deaths a year. But it's not the mosquito itself. It's the pathogens that hitch a free ride that cause so much suffering, death, and destruction. Of all the pathogens that mosquitoes carry, by far the most lethal and the biggest killer of humanity has been malaria.
The mosquito's legs are a tortoiseshell mixture of black, brown, and gold.
A highly effective vaccine against malaria would be a historic breakthrough. And getting there starts with knowing your enemy. London's Natural History Museum is home to one of the world's greatest collections of insects. Senior curator Erica McAllister looks after 150,000 specimens representing 2,900 species of mosquito.
We have maybe 350 drawers of mosquitoes, but only 20 of those drawers are the species of mosquitoes that are important for the transmission of malaria. The difference between the males and the females is very important. The males are all vegetarian, but the female has to generate the eggs. Therefore, she needs a really, really high protein meal, the blood.
You've got the proboscis, her fantastically long mouth part.
It's composed of six stylets. She uses two of those to kind of like penetrate the flesh. She uses two of them to keep it open. And then her final two, one is basically a tube, which she will suck up your blood with. But the other one, through that, she releases her saliva to prevent the blood clotting. And it is in that process that the malaria parasite is able to transfer into us.
An old public information film.
Public enemy number one, Anopheles, the malaria mosquito. Wanted for bringing sickness and misery to untold millions.
Today, malaria is considered a tropical disease. But until very recently, it affected people worldwide. And it's played a huge part in our history.
When we look at European history, for example, Europeans actually called malaria the Roman fever. The word malaria, malaria, actually means bad air in Italian. So Rome was surrounded by 310 square miles of Pontine marshes, which were a hotbed of malarious mosquitoes. Now, interestingly, they acted as a shield from foreign invasion. Invaders either couldn't conquer Rome or had a very brief stay before malaria started to sap the strength of their troops and they would withdraw. So it safeguarded and shielded Rome, allowing for the expansion of Rome the city and also the Roman Empire.
For the next 2,000 years, malaria-carrying mosquitoes continued to plague most of Europe. Modern science would not even begin the fight back until barely a century ago.
At the dawn of the 20th century, a physician of tropical medicine remarked that the future of humanity would be decided by one battle, man versus mosquito.
All right, men, now we can begin to fight.
In animation, Disney's Seven Dwarves in a Line.
During World War II, military casualties from malaria were so high that the authorities declared total war, even recruiting Walt Disney for the fight.
Attaboy, Dopey, killer, good and dead.
The newly invented insecticide, DDT, destroyed mosquito populations. Swamps were drained. Protection against bites improved, as did the availability of malaria treatments and tests.
In the Western world, malaria was made extinct, essentially. As a result, the malaria burden shifted to lower socioeconomic countries, specifically in the global south. Funding for malaria research was drastically cut, and malaria was generally all but forgotten in most wealthy nations.
Bagamoyo, Tanzania.
9 out of 10 people in Tanzania, East Africa, live in the country's malaria zone. And it's the youngest children, naturally much less able to fight off infections, who are most at risk. Farhia Salum is 3 years old. She lives in Kiwangwa village with her mother, Zuhara Abasi, a pineapple farmer and small trader, and her grandmother, Huba Mohamedi.
Farhia has been sick with malaria quite a few times. She gets a really high fever. Her whole body is so hot, it gets particularly bad at night. It's so scary that a single mosquito can pass on malaria and potentially kill someone. Growing up, we weren't aware of malaria as a disease. When I was ill, I would be given roots and herbs. That's how it was back then. 3 of my children died. I'm now left with 6. This is the area where we buried my children. On one occasion, I went out to the fields with a healthy child. A fever came on suddenly there, and by the time we got home and my mother attended to him, he was gone. Every time I come here, it's so painful. Malaria is such a bad disease. Bad, so bad.
Across Tanzania and much of Africa, malaria costs lives and livelihoods, undermining the potential of an entire continent. Dr. Ali Olotu of the Ifakara Health Institute serves on the medical front line.
I got malaria when I was young, and I also got malaria when I went to the university. That's when I became aware that this is it's an awful disease. Globally, malaria causes over 200 million cases and more than 600,000 deaths annually. About 80% of these deaths are actually young children below the ages of 5.
Ali approaches a woman with a sick child and asks, did he have a fever? She replies, yes, he was very hot. And he says, he was very hot, okay.
Tawaka is 3 years old and was in grave danger of falling into a coma until he came to the hospital just 24 hours ago.
So, Mama Tawaka, it's good you brought him here so quickly.
Mapema, seeing kids who are suffering from malaria emotionally is always difficult. As a clinician, as a father, I have to develop interventions to do everything possible to get rid of malaria.
He's still on artesunate, right? She replies no. So now on the oral anti-malarial combination therapy. So, Mama Tawaka, I want to let you know that your child is going to be fine, so do not worry. Sister Koita has given him a blood transfusion, and his levels are now much better.
While Ali regularly treats children who have been infected, his colleague, mosquito biologist Fredros Okumu, works on malaria prevention.
Hey, how are you doing? How are the mosquitoes today? Have you blood-fed the mosquitoes?
Yeah.
To evaluate specific products for protecting people, we have to rear the mosquitoes in our labs. We have to provide water, sugar, and blood.
A technician puts his arm through a net into a box full of mosquitoes.
Today, it is lab technician Stuart Ngala's turn to feed the mosquitoes.
I don't need to be brave. It's normal. Nothing to be afraid of. It's not painful, just a bit itchy.
The mosquitoes we have in the lab are malaria-free. It's something that we scientists do, so, I mean, I do it as well.
The mosquitoes buzz around Stuart's bare arm.
Fredros uses these mosquitoes to test insecticide-treated bed nets. It's estimated that over the last 20 years, tools like these have prevented a staggering 2 billion cases of malaria and nearly 12 million deaths.
Yes, there's been extensive progress. Is it sufficient progress? No. Because now we have this challenge since around 2015 where there are many countries in Africa where malaria cases are going up.
It's not much killing the mosquitoes.
So that particular net didn't kill enough mosquitoes. Okay. The bed nets that we have in the villages are starting to face a lot of challenges. Mosquitoes are no longer being killed as effectively because they have become resistant to the insecticides that we put on the surface, and so the bed net can lose that quality, the killing effect.
You've got mosquitoes that are able to lay hundreds of eggs. They have some really short generation times. So some mosquitoes can be like 2 weeks, and then suddenly you've got a new generation. So any time they get a new chemical thrown at them, if it's not done correctly, you can see gene resistance. And it's like, poof, game over for that insecticide. They're so adaptable.
Despite concerns about increasing resistance, bed nets treated with insecticide remain the world's number one weapon against malaria. But research shows they reduce child deaths by less than 20%.
We need a transformational tool. And I do not think there is any medical intervention that has done better or more than vaccines.
Archive black and white footage of a doctor administering a vaccine to a child.
When it comes to transforming human health and saving lives, vaccination is up there with clean water and sanitation.
Scores of people are vaccinated.
Smallpox, which killed up to 500 million in the 20th century alone, was eradicated in the 1970s thanks to vaccination. And there's also been huge success against polio, measles, and recently COVID-19. But a highly effective malaria vaccine has never emerged. That's not for lack of trying. Ali himself has worked on multiple vaccine candidates.
So do you know what that is working on? What am I working on?
Malaria.
Malaria what?
Malaria vaccine.
Okay. So that you can protect children, isn't it, from getting malaria?
because children below under 5 years who have malaria are in much bigger danger than others.
And they die.
Yes, they can die. But if you go to hospital first, you survive. I saw a child 3 years old who had malaria in the hospital. But he was treated and he will get better. But he was very lucky. As night falls, this is the most vulnerable time. That's when the mosquitoes come in. When the mosquito bites, it injects into that child small parasites. We call them sporozoites. These spend a very few minutes in the blood and then quickly go and start to multiply within the liver.
An animation of the disease spreading in the body.
And these kids could be playing around. They could be playing football, they could be singing with their parents. Nobody can suspect anything. But from the liver, within a few days, you could have thousands and thousands of parasites released into the blood. They attack our red blood cells, destroying them. And this is what actually gives rise to malaria symptoms. That child is so playing with his friends just a few days ago can quickly become severely sick. And if not diagnosed and treated very fast, that child might lose life.
It's this process, the way the body is overwhelmed before it has a chance to fight back, that makes malaria so dangerous. And the development of a vaccine so challenging.
We have developed vaccines for other diseases, of course, but most of these are viruses and bacteria, which are much simpler pathogens compared to malaria. It's a very complex parasite. So I was really excited to be part of the consortium of scientists put together by the University of Oxford to work on a new malaria vaccine.
Oxford, UK.
The University of Oxford is home to one of the world's largest academic vaccine development programs. In 2020, the university's Jenner Institute created the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine. And since then, 3 billion doses have reached 170 countries.
A man enters an office.
Adrian Hill and his colleagues have found malaria much more difficult.
We've known for over 100 years that it would be fantastic to have a malaria vaccine. People have been trying for about 120 years, ever since the parasite was discovered.
I did a count about 6 months ago of how many vaccines had been made and gone into clinical trials for malaria, how many different ones, and that number was 142. I'm not sure there's another disease where there have been that many vaccines that didn't work.
Quarter past 12. Katie Ewer is the lead immunologist on the Oxford team.
I think malaria is more personal for me because it's children. I think you'd have to be a very hard-hearted person not to be moved by a death toll of 400,000 kids a year dying in Africa under the age of 5 from malaria. It's a huge motivator to work on something where the chances of success are really, really small, but the rewards, if you do it, are enormous.
Katie goes into the lab.
For the last 13 years, the Oxford team has been working on a vaccine called R21. Its goal is to fire up the body's immune defences to be ready to attack the parasite at its most vulnerable moment, just after it enters our blood.
When an infected female mosquito takes a bite and injects sporozoites, malaria parasites, there's about a half hour to 2 hour window before the parasites invade the cells in your body and set up infection there. And that's the window that we're trying to target with our vaccine.
What all vaccines must do is mobilize the immune system's frontline defense against invaders, an army of antibodies. Their goal is to quickly neutralize any invading pathogens by tightly binding to their surface, stopping them in their tracks, and marking them for destruction.
problem has been to produce enough antibodies to clear all of those parasites very quickly.
Threatened by just a few invading parasites, our antibody response is usually too little, too late. But luckily, the malaria sporozoite has an Achilles heel. To invade the liver, it relies on a coating called CSP, the circumsporozoite protein.
What we need are large amounts of very specific antibodies that bind as tightly as possible to the circumsporozoite protein. Then we should be able to stop the parasites before they can reach the liver.
This is where the R21 vaccine comes in. It is built from the CSP protein and so induces the body to produce antibodies tailor-made and ready to neutralize the parasite. But this is not a new idea. First designed in 1987, a vaccine called RTSS already does this.
I've had privilege to work on RTSS malaria vaccine, and the overall efficacy of RTSS is about 40% against clinical disease. 40% may sound as not very good efficacy, but you have to think about the burden of malaria. We have well over 600,000 deaths annually, so saving or reducing the burden by 40% is better than nothing.
After lengthy deliberations, in 2022, RTSS became the first malaria vaccine approved by the WHO, the World Health Organization, 35 years after it was initially developed. But RTSS is expensive to produce, supply is currently limited, and it falls short of the WHO's own target of having a 75% effective vaccine by 2030. And so the Oxford team had long set their sights on an upgrade.
R21 was born out of the idea that perhaps we could make a slightly better version of RTSS. So it started with a PhD student called Kat Collins taking this on as her project.
The RTSS vaccine is made of billions of tiny particles. They're built from a virus protein that forms a harmless empty shell, and part of the same CSP protein that coats the malaria parasite. Together, they trigger the body's immune response. But unlike the malaria parasite, less than a quarter of each particle's surface is CSP. Kat Collins and her Oxford colleagues wondered, could increasing the amount of CSP to better mimic the malaria parasite make a better vaccine?
We kept on trying different ways to get that to form into a particle, and it didn't work, it didn't work, and it didn't work. And eventually, after many tweaks and changes, it did. That was a big day. You can literally see these particles with an electron microscope, and boy, those images are memorable. We managed to cover all of the surface of every R21 particle in CSP. We thought, fantastic, we immunized mice, and guess what? They were nearly all protected very well. This was 2012, we were finally getting there, and of course, getting there means you're ready to try and manufacture and go into the clinic.
The ornate dome of Radcliffe Camera in Oxford.
Oxford University's R21 was doing exactly as they'd hoped, creating a strong protective immune response. But that was just in mice. The big challenge now would be testing it in humans. For this, they called on Eleanor Berry, a specialist in vaccine manufacture for human trials.
Vaccines are actually one of the most complicated things you can manufacture. But Adrian and Kat were so enthusiastic about R21. They had generated some excellent preclinical data, and that enthusiasm rubs off on you. So, you know, you begin to feel, yeah, we could do this, yeah.
Eleanor and her team only needed to make enough R21 to inject a small number of healthy people, less than half a cup's worth. but thousands of times more than Adrian's team had created in the lab for their mouse tests. And this time, with human safety on the line.
I've always had the ethos, the feeling that, am I happy for this product to go into somebody? And the best analogy I can use is, would I inject it into one of my two children? And if I can categorically say yes, then I feel reassured in the knowledge that we've done everything we possibly can to produce a safe product. We started the project in 2012 and it took us 3.5 years. If we had been in a commercial situation, I would have think that they would have just stopped the project on many occasions.
We kept going and kept spending and finding and spending more money to get it manufactured.
The major feeling was just a sense of relief that we had got there.
The 10th of November 2015, 85 vials certified. 3 doses per person, 20 to 30 people that would cover. Not exactly vaccinating the world, is it? But it's where we started.
With these precious few doses of R21, the Oxford team began small-scale human trials. First, they mixed the vaccine with a substance called Matrix M, which helps strengthen the immune response. They injected 28 healthy adults and reported it induced an antibody response comparable to RTSS at a much lower vaccine dose. Next, they purposely exposed a few vaccinated people to infectious mosquitoes in what's known as a malaria challenge trial, and found that they were protected from malaria. Such exciting early results drew attention beyond Oxford.
Word got around, and we academics talk at meetings, and you never know who's in the room, but my guess is there was somebody from the Serum Institute of India, and the next month, Umesh Shaligram turned up here wanting to talk about malaria.
Certainly, Oxford data was very convincing, early data. So that certainly made a big difference in our conviction.
They'd heard about the initial challenge results. They came to us. Normally, we go begging to companies, asking them to work with us.
We made a kind of a handshake deal that we could manufacture the product. That's how the whole thing started.
Pune, India.
The Serum Institute of India is the largest vaccine manufacturer in the world. 2/3 of all babies born globally get at least one of Serum's childhood vaccines made here in Pune. It's made this family-run company a global lifesaver, and CEO Adar Poonawalla a multi-billionaire.
Every time we look at a vaccine, the way we look at it is that unless we can make hundreds of millions of doses for the whole world, and unless it has that need and demand, we don't get into it.
Ah, Beto, what's happening?
These are very large populations, so they need a lot of vaccines. It would be unimaginable if they had to pay $10, $20 for a vaccine. They wouldn't be able to afford it. We charge pennies on the dollar for the vaccine, but the economies of scale that we operate at enable us to do that and still make a modest profit.
Go ahead with that.
In 2017, Serum took over manufacturing R21 and spent 2 years developing a new, reliable method to produce it at scale. The team chose the West African country, Burkina Faso, where around half the population gets malaria each year, for the vaccine's first real-world test. In 2019, 450 very young children, the group most in need of protection, were vaccinated in a phase 2 trial. For success, these babies would have to experience no unexpected side effects, and there would need to be a significant reduction in malaria cases in those who received R21.
Oxford, UK.
The UK team waited for news.
It was actually my colleague, Maureen, who said, look at your email, we've got the results.
77% efficacy, as good as we could possibly have hoped.
I wasn't even sure that I could quite believe what I was reading. You know, we showed that the vaccine, albeit just over 6 months, had worked in the target population, in the target age group. But if you've seen really good results, you know what's coming. Large-scale phase 3 trials, definitely a very daunting prospect.
Phase 3 is the largest clinical trial. It will need to be big enough to determine if R21 can safely prevent malaria in thousands of children. And this will cost around $20 million.
Me and Adrian went almost every door to door and tried to search for the funding. Somebody should support us. And we had a really tough time.
We're fighting for funding against people dealing with other very important medical diseases. People are more likely to try and invest in something that sounds new than the old idea of making a vaccine against malaria, which has failed and failed and failed over decades.
After a year's try, I remember I said, Mr. Poonawalla, sir, I'm having a big challenge of getting a funding for the phase 3. And he said, no, don't worry. Malaria is very close to my heart and I want to support the phase 3.
The Serum Institute CEO agrees to fund the trial.
The results have demonstrated that the vaccine is giving you protection. So instead of wasting time, we just wanted to get on with the work.
In April 2021, phase 3 trial preparations begin in Burkina Faso, Mali, Kenya, and here in Tanzania.
Bagamoyo, Tanzania.
Marine Datu is a British infectious diseases doctor. But her key role on the R21 team is to oversee its ultimate test.
What we wanted to propose today to do is a mock-up vaccine preparation for us, just to check it's all running smoothly.
Nearly 5,000 very young children are set to receive shots in the phase 3 trial, hundreds of them in Tanzania. For every 2 children that receive R21, one child will receive a control vaccine. In this case, a vaccine against rabies. This should look just like R21, but offer no protection at all from malaria.
The rabies vaccine is a good option because it's not a vaccine that children would normally receive in that part of the world, so it does provide some benefit.
Crucially, Marine and almost everyone involved is blind to which vaccine each child receives. So they must monitor cases of malaria across the whole trial and only learn much later if those cases were in the R21 vaccine group or the control group.
The only people that are unblinded are the pharmacy team who prepare the vaccine. We want to make sure the whole volume is covered. The whole idea of this is to not know which vaccine the child has received, to ensure there's no bias. It means that, you know, we will get the most accurate data.
That's why there's two of you to do it. It's always a spare pair of hands.
Fishermen crowd a small boat.
My family are actually from East Africa. Unfortunately, when I was doing some research there previously, I got malaria and I was very, very sick. I basically fainted and collapsed and then was diagnosed with severe malaria. I don't remember a lot of it because I was just very, very unwell. I was in my early 20s, so I can't even imagine how it affects very young children.
Women carrying young children walk along the shoreline.
Here in Tanzania, Dr. Ali Olotu is managing the vaccination and monitoring of 600 children.
Hello, mothers. How are you? We're fine. Today you've come for vaccination, right? I'd like to know your children by name. Who's this?
Fahia.
What about this little one? Irene. I'm very pleased that you've all come out today for the vaccine, because without you, this project would not be possible.
In late 2022, a precious cargo arrives at the Kiwangwa Clinic from India. After an initial three doses of either R21 or the rabies control vaccine, a one-year booster shot is now being prepared for Farhia and the other trial participants.
I enrolled my child Fahir in the program, above all because they have great services and really take good care of a sick child. And they also have all the tests, so that was an incentive for me. I'm really excited that Fahir is one of the first to get vaccinated.
For Zuhara Abbasi, vaccination is about much more than simply preventing her daughter from falling ill.
We are a generation of strong women. My mother fought hard for us and she is still working hard despite her age. We're busy farming as well as running a small business selling bagia and mandazi. Our livelihood depends on my small business, and when Fahir falls sick, I can't attend to it. And when you take her to our local clinic in Kwangwa, they won't treat you without either medical insurance or 5,000 in cash. Instead of spending money to treat malaria, whether for kids or adults, you can buy food, vegetables and the like instead. We'll be very grateful for the vaccine. Ali is with a child.
For families and scientists alike, Vaccination Day is special.
They all look relatively happy. No one's crying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really nice to see the relationships the trial team have with the participants and the caregivers, because I think that makes it, you know, almost a bit more like family.
Ali holds a young child. Fahir being in the vaccination trial gives me joy. She will set an example for others. A vaccine is administered, then a plaster is applied.
After vaccination, Farhia and the other children in the trial are closely monitored for signs of malaria. The vaccine's success or failure will depend on how many malaria cases occur in children who received R21 versus the control vaccine. While they wait for this result, the team is also investigating what the vaccine is doing inside the body. For that, they have to study the children's blood.
We can now measure the amount of antibodies that are in the blood. Some of this will be shipped into a reference lab in Oxford, where samples from other sites which are participating will be analysed.
Samples are placed in a freezer. Katie gets into her car.
As phase three booster vaccinations proceed, immunologist Katie Ewer and her team are deluged with these blood samples.
There's absolutely loads still to do. I have a freezer full of thousands of samples from the phase three that we haven't had a chance to start looking at yet.
Samples are taken out.
Having had very recently the experience of taking vaccines through to phase three for COVID, where we had an enormous team of people and AstraZeneca working on it, the contrast to the team working on malaria, where there were seven of us, it's a very different experience.
You got the timer.
Great.
We're under pressure to start churning out some data, so it's full speed ahead. Is plate one up on mine or is it on yours?
No, but the folder's up.
Okay.
The team needs to analyse the children's antibody responses to R21 and the control vaccine. Immunologist Lisa Stockdale is running a test called an ELISA.
We've got quite a big variation. Some of the samples have quite a lot of antibody, whereas some of them don't. We're blinded to which group people are in, but in general, it looks like the plate's developing well. I've been doing hundreds of these ELISA plates, hundreds and hundreds.
To be effective, R21 must prime the blood with antibodies that target the malaria CSP protein. But the team also needs to know if those antibodies can actually neutralize real malaria parasites.
We take the parasites out by dissecting a mosquito.
So I'm just going to hold it with one hand, pull the head away gently. Okay, so we have the head off. You end up with two pairs of salivary glands. They look like little fat sausages. It's those little sacs that have got the parasites in.
Katie peers through the microscope.
Aha, got them.
The parasites are added to lab-grown liver cells, along with blood from vaccinated children. If the liver cells do not become infected, it suggests the antibodies should protect the children too.
There's just a lot of pressure to get through all these samples, get the antibody data together. Shall we do both of them together now?
Could do.
I'm getting emails at 2 or 3 in the morning, so a lot of people are working super hard. I'm a little bit anxious that maybe we've had to push them too hard or we're too ambitious in our timeline.
I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I'm stressed. I'm not sleeping. I'm probably not a great person to be around at the moment, if I'm honest.
All this lab effort is crucial to understanding how R21 works. But above all, they need to know if the vaccine protects enough children in the real world. After around a year of closely monitoring the health of all 4,800 phase 3 children, the wait is nearly over.
Two young children sit on the ground. 22nd of September 2022.
The key phase 3 trial is coming to the end point. The statisticians have the data and they are analysing it as we speak.
You know, this is something that we've all worked on for years, so to be this close, It's kind of nauseatingly, sickeningly, anxiety-inducing, really. You know, we just don't know what we're going to see. And I think we'll be all really relieved to get that result.
11 years after R21 was first made here in the lab, after 7 years of trials, over 20,000 vaccinations and hundreds of thousands of samples analysed, an answer.
Even above significance on severe malaria.
72%? Bloody hell.
Wide confidence intervals, but bloody hell. That's
I mean, that, yeah, absolutely. Oh, God, get me a drink. Yeah. So we have the result of the phase 3. So big moment. As expected from the phase 2, so really interesting results in there. But yeah, really good and really reassuring and, yeah, just very happy.
She smiles, then turns to her desk, puts her face in her hands and sobs. She looks up. She wipes away tears.
Yeah, we're very happy. Although it probably doesn't look like it, but... yeah, it's just a moment that we've been waiting for so long. But, yeah, what we wanted and what we hoped for, so really good. Yeah.
She nods tearfully. Seattle, USA.
Barely a month later, there's a global medical conference in Seattle. The promise of the initial phase 3 trial results is now sinking in. Across the different ages and locations of children in the trial, around a year after they were first vaccinated, R21 has reduced cases of clinical malaria by about 70 to 80%.
Hey, good morning.
How are you? So the teams from Oxford, Tanzania, Kenya, Mali, and Burkina Faso gather to prepare to present their data publicly for the first time.
These people are just extraordinary. They are leaders in their field.
Hello. How are you?
The results that have come in show safety looks absolutely fine in literally thousands of children. And even more excitingly, the efficacy, the reaction was they cheered.
You know, seeing the numbers That was a moment of excitement. Everybody was taken aback and say, you know what, wow, this is real. This is something.
When this result came out, I was like, ah, oof, yeah, this is what I was waiting for long.
So here we are on Sunday. On Wednesday, we're going to try and tell the world about what we found.
If you'd asked me this morning, I would have said I'm filled with anxiety. I have no idea how the rest of the scientific community are going to take it. You know, people are going to critically analyse the results. That's what science is, and that's what should be done. But having had the meeting today and, you know, the most important people who are part of the trial being there, the PIs of every site, and just how excited they are, now I'm excited.
People gather at the conference centre.
We know our vaccine works. We know we have good data. I hope everyone is excited as we are.
The hall is packed.
I'm very pleased today to be able to share with you the first data on the safety and efficacy of R21 Matrix M, a new malaria vaccine.
This is a vaccine that works, that's going to be widely available at a reasonable price, and it could really, really make a big difference. It's great to say game changer, but I really think it is.
It's very encouraging news that they have the Serum Institute in Pune, who's going to be able to really scale up the production of a vaccine.
For reducing the burden of disease and death in children, I mean, it's a wonderful result.
For the team, sharing their results is a moment to savor. R21 can't be directly compared with RTSS. Their trials were different. But there's now no doubt about this new vaccine's potential.
Marine packs her laptop away.
Yet for R21 to have any impact on the lives of children in Africa, all the data must be handed over for independent scrutiny by the World Health Organization.
The spires of Oxford in the distance. Katie leans towards her computer.
There's never any time to sit back and enjoy the moment particularly. It's a relief, but back to the grindstone, really. The end of this week is submission to WHO, and so it's a massive dossier of safety and efficacy data that WHO will look at and decide whether that's enough data for them to approve the vaccine for widespread use. The key people at the Serum Institute are working on the submission package with us, so there's a lot going on.
The reason WHO assessment matters so much is stark. To purchase vaccines, African countries rely heavily on donated funds, and these won't be released without a WHO seal of approval.
If there's no money to distribute this vaccine, then we can make the best vaccines in the world, but if nobody's going to buy it, nobody's going to distribute it, then it's all a waste of time. So this is the next stage of the vaccine process.
But ahead of any WHO decision, in April 2023, there's surprise breaking news.
Day of pure elation for Ghana, for science, and for all of humanity, as the FDA has granted approval to a new vaccine.
Ghana's government has become the first in the world to clear the rollout of malaria vaccine, R21.
Ghana's drug regulator has reviewed the data on R21 and approved it for use, signalling a clear and urgent demand for this new vaccine. Days later, Nigeria follows suit and Angola looks to place an order. But there's still no certainty that the WHO will approve the vaccine and so unlock the necessary funds.
Let's get into the manufacturing details of how to scale up as soon as possible, because now I think there's a lot of excitement.
In Pune, Serum's CEO has a very big decision to make.
How many doses should we then make at risk? I was thinking around 20 to 25 million doses. Do you think that would be okay?
That is, so 5 million Angola wants, and Nigeria also want around 5, 10 million, and Ghana around 5, 10 million. So 20, 25 million is good enough.
Or should we make around 30 million to be safe?
I think so. We should try.
Fine, go ahead, do it. Let me know what the costing and the risk we're taking in that is, but let's just go ahead. What's the expiry on that?
The expiry is about 18 months.
Yeah, that's a matter of concern.
Ada Poonawalla has just risked over $100 million to start production of 30 million doses of R21. They'll be offered at the very low price of under $4 a dose. The gamble is whether WHO approval and sales will come before the vaccine stockpile expires.
The vaccine is manufactured in the lab.
We've taken all the risk, you know, for the trials, for manufacturing 30 million doses. We just hope that it's all worth it. I wouldn't have the freedom to make these sort of risky decisions and bets had I been accountable to multiple stakeholders, shareholders, banks, etc. Here it's just a few people coming together and quickly deciding to go ahead on something. Everything is now on WHO to approve the vaccine. That's all we're waiting for, and then we can roll it out.
In Serum's cold storage, the shelves rapidly begin to fill with R21.
R21 storage hold. This is a place where your heart fills with a joy because finally the product which will get into the humans is ready. This entire cold room can accommodate 40 million doses, which means 10 million children vaccination. Amazing feeling.
The small vial of clear liquid. Katie is with her dog.
As R21 sits in storage, all the team can do now is wait. Even in Ghana and Nigeria, where the vaccine is already approved, no one's come forward to pay. So across Africa, everything rests on the WHO decision.
There's a lot of anticipation, and, you know, it's the difference between thinking that, you know, maybe this vaccine will get rolled out next year and, you know, those kids will start getting the benefit of the vaccine, or we might have another 4 years of clinical trials. It's the first part, I think, in this whole process where I felt really sort of out of control of what's happening, and it's quite an odd sensation when you've created something and then you just have to kind of release it out there into the wider world and see what everybody else makes of it.
In his office, Adrian is at his laptop.
Due process has to be followed. What's happening is there's a balance being struck between having long enough follow-up in thousands of children to be really sure that there's no safety issue, and balancing that against the fact that 1,000 children are dying from malaria every day who could be vaccinated with a vaccine that is sitting in India waiting to be supplied. And that's tricky.
Ali is driving.
I would like it right now. I mean, I would like it yesterday if I may say so. I mean, I would love to have vaccines available for every single child in Africa who is at risk of getting malaria. This is my hope and my dream, really.
He drives through a village.
We need to act fast, with urgency, because we know what is at stake. It will be a tragedy if we allow this vaccine to just be in the shelves. Therefore, my message to, you know, stakeholders and people making decisions about access to vaccine, I think they should remember that, you know, we don't have time to wait.
A child leans on a railing.
With just my scientist hat on, I think there's no reason why this vaccine couldn't be approved for use. Do I think it will be approved for use? I don't know.
It's now a year since the Seattle conference. All that time, the team has been sharing continually updated evidence with the WHO that the vaccine is safe and cost-effective. And although R21's efficacy does decrease a little over time, a booster dose bumps it back up. But now, they've been told to expect an announcement.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Today is a great day for health, a great day for vaccines.
Almost exactly 2 years ago, WHO recommended the broad use of the world's first malaria vaccine called RTSS. Today, it gives me great pleasure to announce that WHO is recommending a second vaccine called R21. 21 metrics M to prevent malaria in children at risk of the disease.
The WHO has approved R21 for use in any African child at risk of malaria. A decision that should trigger the release of critical donor funds, paving the way for vaccine rollout in 2024.
Congratulations, what a great day.
Congratulations to you too.
This is really a historic day, yeah? For Africa, I think.
We're not talking about hundreds or thousands, but over time, well over a million lives saved is just staggering and hugely, hugely gratifying. And you just feel, wow.
Really happy, really relieved and, you know, proud that we've got here. You know, this opens the door for the next stage for the vaccine, which is to get out there into the real world. And that's the bit that I'm sort of most excited about, really.
I'm dreaming for that day to come, and I hope it will come sooner than later. And, this is what I want to see, and this is what every parent wants to see.
From 2024 onwards, the battle to beat malaria will be transformed. If funds are sustained to get R21 to all who need it, along with new, even better vaccines which may follow, this will indeed be game-changing. Beyond which the complete eradication of malaria may no longer simply be a hope, but become a reality. That will truly transform the lives and prospects of hundreds of millions of people across Africa. People like Zuhura Abasi and her daughter, Farhia.
I'll be very happy once malaria is no more. That way my child will be able to study properly. Unlike today, when kids miss school for days because of malaria. Fahir, where would you like to go to school? Fahir replies, the one at Mwinyi's. And what do you want to be when you leave school? A policewoman. So you want to be a respectable policewoman. Officer Fahir, praise be to Allah. Okay, let's sleep now, child. She tucks Fahir up in bed. On the 15th of July, 2024, rollout of R21 began in Ivory Coast with 8-month-old Abulai. Over the next year, millions of African children will get the vaccine.